out of that group of four, the top four, he was fourth last year in the league when it comes to just watching them play. The gap has never been this ridiculously big gap when it comes to Patrick, Lamar Jackson, Josh Allen, and Joe Burrow. All three of those guys had better seasons last year than Patrick did, yes. But there is the reality that Patrick, not once, not twice, but three or four times, has played his absolute best when it's been needed the most. Those other three guys haven't necessarily done that.
Dan Orlovsky.
What?
No, I just
up that.
Not about Dan Orlovsky. You want a quick you're gonna say you're gonna think no, but I'm gonna tell you the answer is absolutely yes.
All right.
Do you want a quick 2026 3-round mock draft from Pro Football Network?
I don't.
I know you don't.
Wait a minute. Okay. Pro Football Network. 3-round mock draft.
Look at this guy, by the way. The dead of the summer. Like, you know what I'm going to do? 3-round mock draft for 2026. Mm-hmm. Here's why and you're going to want to hear it, though.
Okay, hold on 1 second.
Yep, get it ready. All right, so that's not the intro.
Sound of me grabbing the wide receiver big board.
He's holding
just
it tight.
Just for old time's sake.
He's holding it tight. So, here, this could not be better if you're a Bills fan. Pro Football Network mock draft.
Drafting 32nd?
The Bills, in the draft order, are 32nd.
Let's go.
So I believe that is really...
They won the Super Bowl.
They picked them to win the Super Bowl.
Well, then get rid of this board. Who cares?
No. Grab it back. Because not only... I mean, like, you could. I mean, they've won the Super Bowl and everything's, you know...
Yeah.
Whatever. So the Bills are picking 32nd, but...
Traded down with the Chiefs again, huh?
The Bills.
Sorry, it had to be said. I don't actually mean it. Come on, that's what we're here for.
Where does he have the Chiefs, by the way? He has the Chiefs 30th, so he would have the Bills beating the Chiefs in the AFC Championship game.
Who do they beat in the Super Bowl?
Minnesota.
Wow. Which franchise loses a fifth Super Bowl?
Minnesota.
Is that what that is?
Yeah.
Wow.
They lost in the Super Bowl. They need one. Yeah, yeah.
The 0-for-5er Bowl.
Right. So then he has the Bills at 32.
Minnesota.
Trading up 9 spots. They trade 20. They trade, I think they trade a future first round pick. No, that can't be right. They trade a bunch of stuff and they move up from 32 to 23 and draft Indiana wide receiver Elijah Serrett.
Listen.
That's the best mock draft I've ever heard in my life. The Bills win the Super Bowl and then decide we're going to trade up for a receiver right after. And everybody's happy. There's not a soul in town that is upset.
Sure.
About anything.
They could trade for...
Right, they could trade for a punt.
They could trade for a giraffe. I don't care.
Right.
I'm just holding up the big board for old time's sake. Good morning. It's Jeremy and Joe. The big talk today in the content sphere... Listen, it's 9 days till camps open up. Like, we're here. We live in the content sphere. Mm-hmm. The top 10 quarterbacks, according to the NFL, scouts, executives, GMs, all that.
What's the are Eagles fans in the right to be mad that they're going to be mad all day? Everybody's, that Jalen Hurts is ninth.
Everybody thinks their own player is underrated. Jalen Hurts at the 9th best quarterback is not underrated. He's fine.
I think that's about properly. Like, I think the biggest offense, and I think everyone uses this guy. If your quarterback has won and this guy is getting ranked over him at any point, that's when most I see lose their mind, no matter who your guy is. It's when Justin Herbert gets ranked over them.
Yeah.
Right?
That's right.
Justin Herbert being ranked over anybody else's quarterback is fuel to the fire. Because that is who's Justin Herbert? He is the stat. Is he not seen as the stat patter, the guy who can't actually win? What has he done? He got called a social media quarterback a couple of years ago.
He did.
He threw more picks in a playoff game than he did in the entire regular season. Which is propped up as like a huge criticism of him. He, by the way, highest ranking was 3rd.
Herbert?
Yeah. So there's somebody in the league that has Herbert number 3. And I think he is always the catalyst for how could you possibly rank blank above my guy? It's always Justin Herbert. And that's what I'm seeing the most of for Philadelphia right now. Because it's but I don't think that's crazy at all. I think Justin Herbert's a better quarterback than Jalen Hurts is. It's kind of like the Mahomes-Allen conversation. Yes, the other guy's won. The other guy's accomplished a lot more.
Yeah.
But you're telling me he's better?
Here's a fun question for this top 10 list. Would Stafford be on it if he didn't win a Super Bowl? I think he's great. And my favorite thing about Stafford is...
He's sixth, by the way.
He's number 6, according to coaches and GMs. My favorite thing about Stafford is that he seems to be a lot of quarterbacks' favorite quarterback.
Yeah.
That's what right. I love about Stafford. Like, you could just, it's like, you know, game recognizes game. If you ask the top 10, who's your favorite quarterback to watch, Stafford might win that poll because he's just got a ton of respect. Speaking of which, I think the Rams are going to be a wagon this year.
Yeah, you do?
I really do. I think the Rams are going to be awesome. And that's kind of fun because, you know, they're not in the AFC, so I can just kind of root for them. I got nothing wrong with them. One thing about the quarterback series that you learn there is that Jared Goff had not heard a whiff of getting traded to the Lions.
No.
He just got a phone call from Sean McVay one night. Hey, coach, what's up? You've been traded to the Lions.
And he said it was like on social media like 20 seconds after.
Yep.
Yeah.
Wow.
You're going to Detroit.
Yep. And I didn't remember it this way, but
he really got almost emotional about also.
Yes, he did.
Because I remember when he got traded there. I thought this as many other did.
He was sent off to die.
And Detroit didn't even want him. Right. And that the Lions didn't want him. It was just the Rams needed him in the trade as a cap dump. Mm-hmm. They needed to get him off the books so that they could bring in Stafford, that they basically made Detroit take him. But the way Goff and Campbell and Holmes, the GM, all kind of tell the stories, like, and they've held true to this, was no, like they saw him as their starting quarterback for like the long term.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, I remember wanting Lamar Jackson to go there and thinking like, oh, they're building something nice there. They'll improve off Goff at some point, and they never wavered off that. They paid him really as soon as they could. They gave him a new contract.
They did. I also forgot that Goff's first season, they were 0-11. 0-11-1. They finished 3-13-1. And then Dan Campbell's first year, they had 3 wins.
Yeah.
Then 9-8, and then NFC Championship game. One quick thing to kind of follow up on Mark from Tonawanda, who called last segment, his point. Right now on ESPN, which quarterback has the best chance to dethrone Mahomes? Mm-hmm. And they're voting, you know, Allen Jackson. This is kind of the point that either proves Mark's point or is a counterpoint. That's not a question about which quarterback's going to dethrone Mahomes. It's which team's going to beat the Chiefs. Because that's actually the only way to do it. As we've kind of been pointing out, Jackson and Allen have been having better seasons than that guy, and it doesn't count. The only way to actually dethrone him is for your team to beat his team. You don't have to be better. If you got hurt in the second quarter and your team knocked him out, and then you came back the next week, you would have been said to have dethroned him.
Yeah.
Because that's what it is. It comes down to, did your team beat his team? Anyway, I have a food conversation if you want something more fun than just yelling about Mahomes.
What kind of food?
Tacos.
A taco question?
A taco question.
Hmm.
Came up at family taco night. When we go on vacation, so it's Krause Fest, my father-in-law's celebration of the family. We all go to a place. It's amazing. It's wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Each family makes a dinner one night. We're there for like 5 nights. You know, our family does dinner one night, another brother and sister, blah, 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 on and on. 5 different families coming together for one family. So one night was taco night.
Mm-hmm.
Who doesn't love a good taco night, right?
No, they're great.
After dinner, we're all kind of sitting around, and I don't know how it came up, but the question was, how many tacos is a lot of tacos? Because
how many tacos? I got to start with, like, what kind of tacos are we talking about here? Like
hard shell
tacos.
We're gonna go hard shell because I do think it's a different conversation with hard shell.
It's very different.
Yeah,
very different.
How many tacos is a lot of tacos? Because as we're discussing this,
yeah,
I said to my wife, I'm like, I had 5 tacos. She said, that's a lot of tacos. To which I said, that's not a lot of tacos. And immediately right next to me, my brother-in-law Jason said, I had 5 tacos. I'm like, yeah. See, 5 tacos is a very normal amount of tacos.
I tend to.
3 is the minimum order.
Isn't a
serving 3?
Yeah, like if I go somewhere, a restaurant, and order tacos, I'm never getting less than 3.
If it's 2, you're upset.
Yeah.
I better get 3 tacos.
No, normally our taco place is more common than anything, like a la carte for that. Like you're picking, I'll take this one, and this one. And then they bring you the tray with the 3 of them.
Yeah.
Although 5... If I'm only having 3, I think I want something else because I feel like 3 tacos isn't enough.
See? Yeah.
3 tacos on its own is not enough, right? So 5 I don't think 5 can be a lot.
I don't think 5's a lot.
Were there chips and salsa like involved in this dinner, though? Was there a side of anything? Was there queso?
Sure, there would have been other options. But, you know, how many tacos is a lot of tacos?
I don't think I would say that about 5. No.
What's
a lot.
What's the highest number of tacos you've eaten in one sitting?
More than five.
Definitely more than five. Who didn't get a six-pack a million times, right?
Sure.
Like, just go get a six-pack?
I think once you get to seven has to be a lot of tacos, right? How many tacos? Seven. That's a lot.
How many did you eat? Seven. Wow, that's a lot of tacos.
That feels appropriate.
Seven.
Because seven, you're... Especially seven, you are ordering above any single order amount, right?
What if they sell a 12-pack?
When they label that as a family pack?
That sounds judgy.
A 12-pack of tacos?
That sounds judgy.
Because a 6-pack of tacos exists.
Yeah.
So if you end up getting seven, you have gone somewhere and you've seen the 6-pack option and gone, no, that's not enough. I need more than that.
All right.
That's when you truly have reached a lot, I think.
Talking about this last week with former Bills offensive lineman Jerry Ostrowski, he pointed out that he used to get 20 packs.
Okay. Sure.
A 20 pack.
Like when he played in the NFL?
Way back when, it was 20 for wherever he was, it was 20 for 20. $20 for 20 tacos.
Uh-huh. I mean, that I don't totally. I mean, the athletes, when they're playing, aren't they eating like a million? Shaq told a story once where he ate like 6 Big Macs. let me pull it up right here. Shaq said, yeah, last year, he once ate 6 Big Macs, 8 fries, 20 nuggets, and a Diet Pepsi in one sitting. So, like, if you're going into, like, pro athlete territory, like, I'm sure there are some Bills linemen right now that what would a lot of tacos for Deion Dawkins be or for Connor McGovern? It's probably, like, 25.
That's funny. Right. I mean, Eric Wood always tells the story that they do the weigh-ins for Thanksgiving, right? To see, like, how much you could put on?
Yes. Right.
I've never done that.
No. No, I've never done that either.
What if you decide to go tacos at Thanksgiving? A day where you're supposed to eat a lot.
Can't do that.
Would you eat 20?
What are you doing? What spread are you offering me? Like, there's no turkey. Like,
no, it's just taco Thanksgiving.
This is just tacos.
Which,
you're not having a Thanksgiving dinner where there are also tacos.
I'm immediately thinking we should have a holiday called Taco Thanksgiving, or we just eat tacos.
Isn't that kind of
Cinco de Mayo?
Cinco de Mayo,
maybe.
Although I wouldn't stuff myself on Cinco de Mayo like I would on Thanksgiving. Because if I were going to eat the same amount of the same amount of calories in tacos that I eat on a Thanksgiving dinner, would probably be 15 tacos, right? The equivalent of all those mashed potatoes and yams and turkey and everything would be 15, probably. So if you're having 10 people over, you better have like 200 tacos ready to go.
That's right. Anyway.
What was a lot for you?
I mean, I ate 5 and I just said 5's not a lot.
Okay.
That was my answer. 5's not a lot.
I don't think 5's a lot. I think 7. I'm gonna stick with 7 for my number on this.
803-0550, 1-888-550-2550.
If they're soft shell, then 5's a lot.
I tend to agree. The soft shell, like, there's some sort of conversion rate. It's harder to eat 6 soft shell versus 6 hard shell.
Right.
Maybe it's just mental because the crunchiness makes you want to keep going like you're eating chips.
Pretty much.
So, funny story. I was watching Chris Long's Greenlight podcast and file this under, this kind of gets to the Burrow, Cousins, Goff Netflix show, and soon the Bills on Hard Knocks. What will we learn about that we don't know? The number of stories you don't know what you don't know in the NFL, it's incredible. Once these former players start telling stories, Chris Long's telling a story about sacking the quarterback and how when you get a sack as a defensive lineman, sometimes your other fellow linemen will think it belongs to them. And if I got this right from what Chris Long was telling the story, he's playing once, he got a sack and a half in the game, he goes in the locker room, and one of his team is like, I think it was James Laurinaitis he might have been playing with the Rams at the time.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, you might want to go talk to Jimbo. He's going to submit that one. And what it means is you can submit a highlight to the league for them to rescore the sack for you.
Oh.
So that linemen sometimes...
Uh-huh.
He basically what Chris Long was talking about in this episode was a code among defensive linemen. There's a code. And if someone got a sack they shouldn't have, then yeah, you can go ahead and submit that. But he went so far as to say, if you don't have an incentive in your contract for sacks and I do, I'll pay you to not submit to the league to rescore that sack. Because I'll give you 20 grand. I might have an incentive that pays me 500 grand on a certain number of sacks.
Yeah.
The kind of stuff, would you have ever in a million years
never
thought about that?
Thought about that for a second, but it totally all adds up.
Right.
Right.
I know everybody's on the same team. Everybody's about them, you know, the team. And this, but scoring a sack, did I lose a half sack? Did I gain a half sack?
Yeah.
Do I have an incentive? That the players are sometimes the ones that will submit.
Right.
I think I should have got one here. Here's 15 grand. Just don't.
Yeah.
Okay.
The league probably goes back and does it themselves too, though, don't they?
I don't.
Reevaluating all that? No.
Because
there are stat corrections every week.
That's right. The question is, does a player or the agent go in and say, go check that out?
Right.
And
point,
we don't
point them to
and
it.
We don't know that process the way we think we do.
Then how. So then what does it do? I wonder, maybe he tells a story like this where both guys have incentives.
Well,
on the sack. And if one guy gets credited for it and he knows his teammate's about to take it away, could start some fights.
You would wonder.
Could start some fights.
He was just telling, you know, a couple little stories like that. He had another one with Michael Bennett, I guess.
Okay.
You might want to go talk to him. He's talking about that. That's going to be his sack. Like, whoa. So, just you don't know what you don't know.
Well, especially those, like, linebackers. Like, James Laurinaitis was a middle linebacker. I would be surprised if he had a sack incentive in his contract.
Right.
So that
right.
one's probably easier.
Right.
But if you and if Greg Rousseau and Ed Oliver are arriving at the quarterback at the same time and they give the full sack to Rousseau, but Oliver's got, like, that's when I feel like, you know, you could get into a hairy situation. If they both want it. That's why half sacks were invented, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for that exact reason. Because I guess you'd split some. Isn't there a movement to get rid of those and try and give them to one
person?
The
half sacks?
Yeah. I feel like there's a small movement to do that.
I don't know. That's tough, though, right? Like, there are so many sacks where I feel like, you know, guys are getting there at the exact same time. Or what do you do when one guy starts to trip up the quarterback and the other guy comes in and finishes it? Like, he's not all the way down yet, but he's stumbling because you made contact in the first. Like, there would be a lot of situations, I think, that would be like that. So. Anyways.
803-0550, our phone number, and 1-888-550-2550. July 14th, almost time for camp. Getting on to it. Who's ready?
I'm ready for some more stadium stuff, too.
Yeah?
Matt Beauvais with the video last week that I saw going viral around the league. Like, everybody like, wow, look at the Bills stadium. Taking the video from Matt was on the canopy. So, like,
you
that
know,
looks insanely high, especially when you see the old stadium
yeah.
across the way. How much lower the old, I think Matt even says it in the video. Like, it looks so tiny, the old stadium across the way. I think every picture I'm now seeing is getting me more and more fueled for it because it's really starting to look like, okay, I can visualize now. It's complete enough that you can visualize, I think, what it will look like when you're sitting down for a game. Like the shapes, right? The shapes of the seats and the stadium and the scoreboard, like all of that is kind of in place to where you can, it's way easier to visualize now than I would say it even was like 2 months ago.
Will we? I don't hear many people saying it looks like a spaceship landed, but it kind of looks like a spaceship landed.
Not yet, but I bet once you start getting the wrap on the outside of the stadium,
yeah.
then it's that's really going to take off.
Yeah, maybe.
Like, and that should happen, I think, isn't that not supposed to happen during the season? Like when fans are going to Highmark Stadium yeah, this yeah. year, that you'll look across the street and it from the outside, it's going to start looking like that.
Right, and a lot of stadiums like that, like Arizona's looks like that.
Yeah,
the new stadium. The thing I, you know, watching Matt Beauvais' video, and we're going to probably run through there sometime soon and get our look at it. But it's just going to be incredible. And the thing it. I say spaceship. The first thing I think when I see it is soccer stadium. It looks like a soccer stadium.
Mm-hmm.
The canopy. And one thing that Matt pointed out in his video was, you know, some of the pictures, the canopy looks kind of small, which means there's a lot of open sky. But he said that it definitely covers 2/3 of the seats, so only
mm-hmm. –
which, you know, let me tell you, the upper deck seats, those are going to be so nice,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
You are now going to go to a Bills game where currently the worst seat is to sit upper corner, wind tunnel, cold,
yeah.
December. Now
you're really far away too.
Cozying up in that. I mean,
yeah.
You wear a t-shirt.
You're basically. You're gonna. I wonder how much it will really feel like you're indoors.
To be way up
on a cold day when you are, you know, you're up against the wall, but you also have the full canopy overhead, and it like extends way out from where you are. So you're like so. You're as removed from the elements as you possibly could be while still being outside. I do wonder, like, how on a 30-degree day, on a 15-degree day, yeah, you're going to need your winter jacket in the top end of that? Maybe you won't.
I don't know. It looks like it's going to be quite nice, though. Very exciting.
There also is the – we'll get into some uniform stuff maybe this week, and the Chargers go tomorrow, but – there was a kind of an indication from Pete Guelly, wasn't there, at the owners' meetings that maybe they're going to do something brand new when they open the new stadium, uniform-wise. So, like in that, I wonder if that's even on a permanent basis.
If they would completely,
people want the red helmets, and maybe they would do something with red helmets on a permanent basis, and the red helmet wouldn't come back as an alternate, but it would come back as like this is our helmet now.
Yeah. Can you imagine the Bills do something like the Sabres did 30 years ago? Which, by the way, the Goathead jersey, this is the 30-year anniversary of it.
Okay, let's go. Nice.
Can you imagine if they just say, like, here are new uniforms, all new colors, new logo, everything.
You know, I can't.
It's kind of amazing that any team ever has done that when you think about history, but, you know, they do it.
It's not it seems, many, though.
No, and it seems much more rare now. The 90s had an era of completely overhauling uniforms.
The Sabres did it. The Ducks did it eventually. Did anybody in football do it?
Complete overhaul?
Like the colors, I mean.
The Bucks.
The Bucks.
The Bucks
That's
went
right.
from creamsicle to, yep. to you know pewter.
That's right. Yeah. There can't be many, though. That's a very. That's why I can't. I can no. I can't. What are they going to do? They're going to wear green. They're going to. Hey guys, the Bills are going to wear green and yellow now.
The Patriots changed in a big way. Invented a new logo. Pat the Patriot. The one looks like Elvis.
They still stuck with blue and right, red.
But a,
right.
But
like
a fully new logo.
Yeah.
Just out of nowhere, the Seahawks changed their colors.
The craziest thing about the Sabres wasn't just that it was the fully. It was a.
It was a
brand new color scheme. The new logo happens. New color scheme does not happen.
I got another a couple more for you from the NBA. The Pistons did this.
Okay.
The Mavericks did this.
They wore green at one point, the Mavericks.
Mm-hmm.
And they're blue and silver now.
And they had a big horse. I mean, the Pistons went from blue and red to whatever they wore when they were the giant horse breathing fire.
Yep.
Anyway. New uniforms. It's fun. When we get back, Ben Gretsch, Stealing Signals. Interesting, really good, thorough, like numbers-based stuff. He liked to dig into the weeds on, you know, the Bills, their offense, the league. He wrote a piece about the AFC East and what these offenses are going to try to accomplish. A lot going on in this, this division this year. Of course, the Bills the favorite. So, Ben Gretsch, Stealing Signals on the other side here on WGR.
The upside is very clearly there. They added a lot of defensive talent. Drake May is very talented. If Stephon Diggs is healthy, he has the number one receiver. The offensive line should be improved. The offensive coordinator should be improved. The coach actually knows what a coach is supposed to be doing on different days. That's, like, important. So, I mean, the upside is definitely there. I think a 7-10 or something is more likely than them being really in the wild card hunt. But I think the upside is stronger than Miami, like I said.
It's Aaron Schatz talking a little Patriots there. Jeremy and Joe, good morning. Beautiful Monday out there. 9 days till the start of Bills training camp, at least first practice, 9 days away. Rookies report tomorrow, NFL season about to get rolling. Joining us on the Wester Hotline, a guy I'm a fan of, Ben Gretsch. You can follow him on Twitter, at Yards Per Gretsch, and does a Substack. Stealing Signals. He joins us in the Western Hotline to chat a little about the AFC East and these offenses. Ben, good morning. It's Jeremy and Joe. Thanks for taking some time bright and early. I know you're out in the West Coast.
Yeah. Waking up with you guys, having my morning coffee. Thanks for having me on.
Beautiful, beautiful. Well, Ben, for people that maybe don't know about Stealing Signals, just tell everybody a little bit what it is before we kind of dig into the Bills offense, the Patriots, the Dolphins, the Jets, and what this division might look like this year.
Sure, yeah. I mean, it's more fantasy football focused, but I definitely try to blend real football analysis with the stats every week during the season. I do game-by-game breakdowns on Monday and Tuesday that looks at fantasy values, but also, you know, talks about the sport as it's played and how the stats are compiled, because I don't think enough people who are purely looking at the numbers think about the unique elements of, you know, the different offenses and those types of things. And the AFC East has a lot of unique elements to it this year.
What about it jumps out at you as being the most unique?
Well, I mean, each of the teams have unique elements. If you look at like Miami and the Jets, for example, they have two sides of a similar coin, which is in fantasy football, we're looking for volume a lot of the time. And when you look at like pass rate, for example, you're looking at called pass plays, but different quarterbacks will turn called passes into pass attempts at different rates. And so because of Tua's concussion history, one of the things we've been seeing in Miami the last several years is his scramble rate has declined. His rate of designed runs has declined. He's taken fewer sacks. He's getting the ball out a ton. So they're calling more pass plays, but they're also turning called pass plays into pass attempts at one of the highest rates in the league. And so you're going to get a ton of pass volume. And they have a really concentrated offense. You have the potential for really high reception numbers. A fun stat on them, Devon Achan had more receptions than any running back in the league last year by 10. And he did it despite having massive splits in the Tua games versus the non-Tua games. He had 6 receptions per game in the 11 games Tua played and only 1.8 per game in the 6 games that Tua missed. And so you have this potential for him to have a massive receiving role, or Tyreek to have a bounce back year, or those types of things. With the Jets, you have sort of the exact opposite end of the spectrum. They're going to be more run heavy. Their whole offensive line grades better as run blockers than pass blockers. They have very good running backs, and they have Justin Fields' dual threat ability. But then the other big thing is when they do call passes, which is going to be a lower rate, Fields also scrambles at an incredibly high rate. He takes sacks at an incredibly high rate. So he turns those called pass plays into pass attempts, which turn into targets and catches and the ability for receivers to get stats at a very low rate, which makes it really hard for a guy like Garrett Wilson, for example, who I really like as a talent. Makes it really hard for him to have a statistical ceiling that makes him a fun fantasy football player.
You know, as you're kind of getting into this, you know, you say it's skewed to fantasy football to some degree, but what it reveals is, you know, something that really happened on the football field, Tua getting a concussion, changes kind of the way that they operate their offense, right? That calling pass plays, but also getting more pass attempts out of those, that is where these numbers that you kind of dig into can show you maybe a team's tendencies or why they can be a bad matchup for a specific opponent within the same division.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's a fascinating thing in terms of how the real life stuff is going to impact that. But a lot of people were talking about the quick passing game to the perimeter for Miami as being something that was a little bit gimmicky last year. Jonnu Smith had a ton of catches late. They ended up trading him this offseason. I think that is their way of matching something that the teams with the mobile QBs can do, which is stretching defenses laterally at the line of scrimmage. If you have, you know, Justin Fields, or if you have Josh Allen, right? The ability for those guys to pull on like a read option where they're maybe going to give to a running back up the middle, but they pull the ball, has to hold the defensive ends and the edge defenders on the outside. And we see that mobile quarterbacks have a very positive impact on running backs' rushing efficiency, because defenses can't crash down on the run because they have to respect the ability of the mobile quarterback to pull the ball and go around the end, right?
Yeah.
Well, in Miami, you can't do that with Tua. So the way that they manufacture that is those quick passes to the perimeter. They split out Achan. They split out Jonnu Smith a lot last year. And Tua is actually really good at quickly releasing and throwing it accurately to the perimeter. It's not like an elite skill necessarily, but there are guys who are better at that than others. And so the guys that were, you know, Achan and Jonnu that were catching those quick passes had really, really high catch rates last year, because they're basically extended handoffs, and it allows them to stretch defenses horizontally pre-snap, force defenses to put players on the perimeter, which also should help them run up the middle a little bit and do some of the things over the middle of the field that they want to be able to do. So that's going to be a part of their offense, I think, again this year, and it's going to lead to really high reception rates. So if you play in those PPR leagues, I think the Miami guys are pretty valuable for that.
You know, Ben, I want to run this by you because it's been something, you know, here in Buffalo, we kind of live in the MVP debate at quarterback over the last couple seasons. Ben Grutch joining us on the Western Hotline. And when you say that mobile quarterbacks help a running game, here we're talking about whether or not the Bills should extend James Cook and sign James Cook. And in Baltimore, Derrick Henry had huge numbers. And for me, I feel like the MVP conversation always gets to, well, that guy has help, so that should work against him. But this point you make about mobile quarterbacks helping a running back, to me, that's a point in favor of an MVP argument. The existence of Allen helps Cook. That's value you're getting additionally from Allen. And the same with Jackson, too. Like, Jackson, when he hands the ball off to Henry, him being there is still super valuable to that run game's existence.
Yeah, there's no question. I mean, I think you put that very well. As far as from what I see in the numbers, what I expected going into last year and what I saw during the season, I think both those quarterbacks were significant elements to both those running backs having the seasons that they did. Henry having the big bounce back year, you know, at age 30 after a tough year in Tennessee the year prior was largely because you have Lamar Jackson's threat to pull the ball and run on the edge and be so dynamic in the run game. And James Cook going from two rushing TDs the first couple of years to now under Joe Brady, they're doing things a little bit differently. He has 16 rushing TDs last year. I mean, that's because also Josh Allen's rushing TDs have spiked under Joe Brady, and they're using him as a more of a rushing threat in the red zone. And that just makes it more difficult to put the numbers in place to stop Cook from getting the space he needs. I mean, obviously he's a good running back as well. It works both ways, but certainly Josh Allen's unique skill set is having a very positive impact there.
How could you see their offense evolving, Ben? They faced one of the highest rates of stacked boxes in the league last year, which is almost incredible. They were able to run the ball as well as they did anyway. And then this year they go out and I think they improve the receiver position. I don't think they're like the best in the world, but Josh Palmer and Elijah Moore over Mac Hollins and whatever was left of Amari Cooper. If they can get more separation down the field, how do you feel like that could, you know, evolve the whole offense?
Yeah, I'm really intrigued. That's what makes them unique as well. I mean, over 60 offensive touchdowns last year, which is a huge number, and yet only Allen and Cook scored more than six. Ray Davis was third on the team with six touchdowns. Mac Hollins had five. Everyone else on the team had four or fewer, which is shocking. I mean, that's what the numbers look like for the teams that don't score a lot of touchdowns in terms of spreading around the love a little bit. It's funny, the Bills have that everyone eats mentality, and I think it does negatively impact them a little bit for fantasy because they have kind of different roles and packages and ideas for the different things they want to do. I really like Khalil Shakir, what he's been able to do. Obviously, a lot of what I just described about the quick passing game to the perimeter in Miami, Bills fans will know that Shakir was a huge part of that in Buffalo. They added that with him, the swing passes, and he's so dynamic with the ball in his hands. He has probably not shown the downfield separation and target earning of some of the other receivers that he's going around in drafts. So I'm curious to see how his skill set will develop. He's certainly my favorite piece in the passing game for the Bills. But I do think you mentioned some of the new names. They're going to use a lot of these guys. They're hoping Keon Coleman develops. They're hoping to get a healthier season out of Dalton Kincaid. And I do think it's a little tricky in the passing game, even if that develops, because their pace slowed way down last year as well. This is a team that used to run pretty up-tempo offenses with Josh Allen and was very slow last year. And despite scoring over 60 touchdowns, I mean, they're a team that ran well under the league average in play volume. And then the other key number for them was their pass rate over expectation. The expected pass rate would be relative to game situation. So the fact that they're winning all the time does mean that they would be expected to run more, but their pass rate over expected was still negative. It was the negative for the first time since either 2018 or 2019. It had been about 5 years solidly in the positive. And so this, you know, Joe Brady offense, it shifted in the middle of 2023. It looked a lot different down the stretch, and they were so efficient still, scoring all the touchdowns, playing at that slower pace. I mean, that was one of the big reasons I did like Josh Allen in the MVP discussion. A lot of people said statistically Lamar Jackson has such a great discussion, you know, such great stats. But if you really watch the games, I mean, the Bills were lethal on a per drive basis and scored a ton of touchdowns and those things. But the way that they structured their offense was a little slower, a little bit more spread. But clearly it's all around Josh Allen, and all the other pieces are basically just built to support him and what he brings. I think he's fun in fantasy. I do think it makes it a little tricky for the Bills and all their pieces being like fun fantasy players.
Ben Grutch stealing signals. One last team. We haven't checked too much on the Patriots. You know, they've got a lot that they, I think, should be excited about. I'll be the first one to say, like, I think Drake May has shades of Josh Allen. Of course, he's got a long way to go to get there. What do you think New England can expect out of their offense this year? It's kind of tough, with, right? A change at coach and some new players and a quarterback that really only played, what, half the season last year, did not win a lot of games, but flashed enough to show people that there's reason to maybe be excited. What do you ultimately see from New England offensively as they've been pretty brutal for a couple of years here?
Yeah, their win total over-under in Vegas is up to like 8.5. They're expected to be a 500 team, which is one of the biggest jumps from their actual finish last year. So the market does think this is going to be a better team. They've done a lot to address the defense. Drake May looked really, really good last year. They brought in some depth at offensive lines, some free agents that kind of project more like league average types, but that should actually raise the floor for a unit that was pretty bad. And then obviously, you know, addressed it in the draft in a big way. But this is a team that looks like they're moving the right direction. New coaching staff, everything that you mentioned. But it is a little bit hard to tell. I really like Travion Henderson, the rookie running back. I think he's got a really good profile. Obviously, two veteran backs in Ramondre Stevenson and Antonio Gibson there that will make it so that he's probably going to be more of a late season hit if he hits in a meaningful way for them this year, because those veterans will often get the early season work. And then they add three receivers in Stephon Diggs, Matt Collins, and the rookie Kyle Williams. Obviously, two of those guys have the Bills ties. Collins had his best year of his career 3 years ago under Josh McDaniels with the Raiders. And so I do think he's going to play. He played a decent amount for the Bills last year. I think Diggs, as long as he's healthy, is going to be probably the pretty clear number one. But it's still tricky because they have most of their wide receiver room from last year back. They have DeMario Douglas back. They have Kayshon Boutte back. They still have Kendrick Bourne under contract. They're paying him a good amount of money. Both the rookies from last year that didn't really do anything, Jalen Polk and Javon Baker, are back. So they have like eight wide receivers that you could tell yourself a story might be a part of the mix. I think they're going to have maybe a surprise cut or two in there, actually. And they still have Hunter Henry, who led the team in targets last year, and Austin Hooper, who as the second tight end pitched in like 59 targets last year. Drake May liked throwing to those two veteran tight ends last year. So even if this team's better, it's similar to me to the Bills, where kind of hard to put my finger on which of the passing weapons I think can consolidate the volume. That's one of the big things in fantasy I think goes overlooked, is how concentrated the targets and the volume can be. That's something I really like in Miami, as we were talking about. But in New England, I think it might be a little bit trickier. I do like May, though. I like that skill set, the vertical passing plus the mobility usually can lead to some pretty big fantasy seasons.
Ben Grutch on the Western Hotline. Ben, thanks so much for the time. It's bengretch.substack.com, at Yards Per Gretch. And really, for fantasy footballers and, you know, people who want to dig into matchups and games, it's comprehensive. There's a lot of great stuff in there. Ben, great work, and thanks for coming on.
Yeah, appreciate you guys having me. Have a good one.
Ben Grutch, up early with us. I've been a big fan of his for a while. Some of the fantasy football, or, you know, you want to see gambling stuff out there, that really dig into a game and a matchup and what this team plays like and what that team plays like. He's on my short list of just like really cool resources this time of year, digging into who to start in fantasy, daily fantasy, whatever you might do. So Ben Grutch at Yards Per Gretch.
When we come back in Extendo Sports, there's a wide receiver in the NFL who has asked for a trade.
Breaking sports news airs first here. Guaranteed. WGR Sports Radio 550. 2020 Sports.
Extendo Sports.
Adam Schefter reports that 49ers wide receiver Juwan Jennings, who's in the final year of his deal, he either wants a new contract or he wants a trade. He's coming off a huge year, 900 yards. He had over 100 targets.
Yep. He's really good.
He's very good. Yep.
The Niners are consistently in this spot, and my read of it, if you want it, is that what they do is they pay stars and backfill with draft picks. The Rams are this, too. The Rams got this reputation for not wanting picks. Mm-hmm. It was just about firsts. They traded first for stars, And then they drafted a million guys in the late rounds.
Yep.
And the Niners are following a very similar model. And that means if you're going to be that, you're not going to bring back your mid guys. Right. So because of that, if you think this guy is mid and you can just replace him in the draft with a second round pick, you save money and you only pay the really big whales, which is kind of how the Niners roster has been built.
Right.
And we wondered if they would pay Purdy. The answer to that has been yes.
Yep.
But Trent Williams, Kittle, McCaffrey,
Ayuk,
Debo, Ayuk eventually. They fought him, but they paid him.
Yep.
Debo back in time, they did back when he requested a trade the first time. Fred Warner. Like they paid their really great players.
Yeah.
Like if the Niners were running the Bills, I don't think they would bring back Terrell Bernard. I don't think they'd bring back Shakir, maybe. Just the idea is if you're not an A++ guy, we're gonna let you walk.
Yeah.
To a point.
Well, maybe they if they don't have those guys though, would they pay them? You know what I mean? Like, if they don't have Trent Williams and Bosa
right.
and Greenlaw, and Greenlaw's not there anymore, but all those studs, maybe you're more willing to do it. I mean, Jennings, he doesn't get a contract, right?
Right.
With all that being said, they paid Ayuk, although he's coming off a knee injury, but they did pay him, and they have a first-round pick invested in Ricky Pearsall.
And here's Juwan
Jennings.
So
they're going to pay a third guy on top of those two investments?
They probably draft Pearsall knowing that they're not going to pay Jennings, I guess.
Well, they might have drafted Pearsall knowing they were going to get rid of Debo.
That's right. That's 2 years ago.
So
anyway, Juwan Jennings wants a trade.
Good luck.
Good luck. All right, the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show is coming up. We're back tomorrow morning, and you can join us bright and early. Jeremy and Joe, thanks for listening. See you tomorrow.